Welcome to episode 76 of the Mountain Land Running Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Heiderscheidt from the University of Wisconsin Sports Medicine. And here, back by popular demand, Jeremy Stoker.
Brian, thanks for saying by popular demand. I know that all those emails are flooding your way, but we got to be honest on this podcast, okay?
Hey, I'm all about honesty, transparency, and there's nothing artificial about that at all.
Yeah, right. Anyway, how are you, Brian?
I'm all right. Good to have you back, buddy.
Yeah, glad to be here. We're excited about today.
Yeah, for sure. All right, send questions and feedback. We got to get this out of the way right off the bat to podcast@mlpt.com. We love to hear your suggestions for guests as well as feedback on past guests and on content areas. So please send us some notes. We would love to receive them. All right. Without further ado, today we are joined by Anouk Nijs of the Vrije University of Amsterdam. And I'm sure I butchered that, but I'm going to do my best to get through it. And we're going to discuss running style modification today. Anouk has done some great work in this area, and we're excited to get her on the podcast. So Anouk is a PhD candidate in the Department of Human Movement Sciences and in the final stages of her PhD research, which focuses on effective instructions and feedback in running, aimed at improved performance, reduced injury risk, and lasting engagement. In the project, she is working towards a Running Buddy application that will help runners find their running style through exploration. Welcome, Anouk, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're excited to get you on. As I've mentioned, running or gait retraining, running retraining, running form modification, whatever term you use, is a really popular area. It's something that we want to always understand more on and what's being done at the basic science level of that. And the idea of learning and integrating and incorporating and adhering to are all fundamental pieces that we need to understand better. So your work is spot on for our interests.
Yeah.
So maybe let's start with just a little bit on your background and how did you get interested in this area of work?
Yeah. Okay. So when I was growing up, I used to be a gymnast, and in gymnastics, instructions and feedback are really key to learning anything at all. So that's where my interest already came from. Then I started studying human movement sciences and learned how complex movement actually is and how difficult it really is to change things. After my master's degree, this PhD project, when I found this PhD project on feedback and instruction, I was very interested immediately. And this project focused on running. And initially I thought, that's much easier than gymnastics, but I was very wrong because running is super complex. And so, I've been working on that, trying to simplify it, trying to modify the running styles for the past couple of years.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that because that was my first thought when you said your background was in gymnastics and learning the movement side. I'm like, oh, yeah. Running should be much easier than a lot of those sorts of applications. But you're right. Once you get into any sort of area, you start to realize it's never as easy as you initially thought it would be, even if you start thinking of walking. And in some ways, walking and running, they're so ingrained and so fundamental in many ways to human movement that even though they may be at face value, more simplistic movements, they are so hardwired that it makes it very challenging to deal with.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So are you approaching this from the idea of running retraining to understand the concept of how do you modify somebody's movement patterns? Are you interested more from an injury standpoint, more of a performance standpoint? What's your motivation?
My motivation is mainly to be able to actually change things, because a lot of research in running as well is aimed at finding these key factors that lead to a higher injury risk or that lead to a better performance. But what's the next step? So once you know what the important variables are, you still need to be able to change them in order to actually make a change.
I agree. So, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And what's been suggested so far, many times the approach is some involve a lot of different levels of technology. Some are less technologically involved, thereby making them potentially more feasible for general practice. So those are obviously factors that need to be considered as well.
Yes. And I think in general, in the last couple of years, wearables have become much better. So measuring is not really the issue anymore. And there's a lot of data, but yeah, we need to be able to use that data effectively to actually change something.
In the way I've described a bit of gait retraining in the past as well to others is, you're right. Once you identify the variables that you want to change, then it's really at that point more about identifying the educational process to trigger that change. And that may not be the same process for each individual, right? When we think about just general learning styles, and that's at a very simple level, but even at a different level in terms of trying to get at that aspect of movement, people will respond differently to different cues or differently to the same cue. And so trying to map that out and coming up with options is really, I think, important.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, ideally you would have the perfect coach for each individual with the perfect instructions. But we've got a long ways to go before we get there.
Exactly. So in terms of the work that your group had just done prior to this, is there a particular series of studies that had been going on that led to where you're at now?
Initially we started off with looking at the cadence because it's a parameter that has a lot of research done into it. So it's been linked with injuries and with performance and with running economy, all these things. So we thought, we know a little bit about that one, so we can start by changing that one. And we did some studies into acoustic pacing. So a beep for every step or a beep for every stride in order to modify the cadence. And then a couple of years ago, there was this synthetic review by Ben van Oeveren. Mm-hmm. And he proposed the dual axis model to define running styles based on only the cadence, which we were already working on, and the duty factor at a certain speed. And so we thought, that's great. We already know how to modify cadence. If we now focus on the duty factor, we'll be able to change running styles. Mm-hmm. So that's where, this most recent study on modifying the duty factor came from.
Right. Well, that leads us perfectly into my next question, which is understanding what duty factor is. I think I've seen a couple of different definitions used, some as simple as the percent of stance time relative to the percent of swing time. Now, then there's also stance time to flight time, and then there's a few others. So how do you define duty factor, and why did you settle on that definition?
Yeah, you're right. There's a couple of different definitions out there. I think it should reflect the stance time to flight time ratio, but because for running it works, but for walking that won't work because right. There's no flight time. So we use the definition of the stance time divided by twice the step time.
Yeah.
So then you basically get how long does your foot touch the ground relative to a stride.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get this value from 0 to 0.5.
And the idea there is that you're understanding, if you understand the amount of time in contact with the ground, then you understand the potential for force development that can occur relative into the act of running. Is that it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to look at duty factor rather than stance time, mm-hmm. because the complete step time also is an important factor there.
Yeah. So is there a reason why duty factor has been suggested as being a key variable, as you mentioned a little bit just there, that you need to be able to understand it relative to the step time? But is there a kind of a fundamental aspect of duty factor as it relates to performance or as it relates to injury risk or other more translatable reasons of why you'd want to study duty factor?
Yes, the duty factor has been related indeed to performance, where a low duty factor, so a relatively long ground contact time, would lead to better performance. And the same has also been found for running economy, although there's also some results that say a high duty factor would be better for running economy, which makes it all very confusing.
yes, it does.
Yeah, and for injuries, the tendency is that a higher duty factor would lead to a lower injury risk. So that, again, gives a bit of a problem because that's the opposite from performance. So there's a lot of reason why you'd want to look into this variable and be able to modify it also to be able to do more research into it.
I'm going to interject here. That's okay. I want to make sure that I understand it and the listeners understand it. So this duty factor that we're looking into, it's a relationship between my initial contact to my toe off in relation to how much I'm actually at mid stance or right underneath me. Is that correct? I'm understanding that correctly, Anouk?
I think it could reflect that, but it's really only the time. So just how long is your foot in contact with the ground within mm-hmm. one step?
Within one step. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's the easiest way to think about it. So yeah. If the duty factor is low, your foot only was in contact with the ground for a short time in that step. And if it's high, your foot was on the ground for a long time within that step.
Yeah, I think it's basically a way to normalize it. To normalize your contact time, right?
Yes.
And a lot of running coaches and running ideas have talked about contact time. And in some ways, like you mentioned, a lot of it is to try to reduce or minimize the amount of time on the ground and get those feet off quicker. In fact, there are very popular retraining programs that are designed to minimize that contact time. But as you also mentioned, there's almost the opposite as well, where more time spent on the ground has also been linked to performance. And that makes sense because it gives you more time to produce force. And so it may have a lot to do with what's your goal of running. Are you sprinting? Are you in more of a middle distance? Or are you doing distance running and really trying to maintain more of that running economy side of it? So does that summarize it fairly well, Anouk? Or is there other thoughts you have to share?
Yeah, I think that summarizes it really well.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, good. All right. So with that, I want to get into your paper. So the paper is entitled Running Style Modulation, Effects of Stance Time and Flight Time Instructions on Duty Factor and Cadence. And Anouk is the lead author on this. It was published in Gait and Posture this year. And in fact, just last month, I believe. So we'll put the link to the paper up on the podcast download site. And so happy to for each of the listeners to read the abstract through. And if you're interested in the paper, we're happy to pass that along as well. So let's start a little bit. What is the overall purpose that you went at this with? Obviously, it's gait retraining. It's going to involve duty factor. It's going to involve cadence. But what really were you hoping to achieve with your study?
Yeah, we hope to, we tested four different instructions, and we wanted to see whether those were effective at changing duty factor, and then also check whether they affected cadence, because that's what we don't want with this. And if the instructions were effective, we wanted to compare them. So the four instructions we tested were try to increase your flight time, try to decrease your stance time, and the opposite. So try to increase your stance or decrease your flight time.
And just for clarity, the reason you did not want it to alter cadence is you're looking for a particular set of instructions that focuses on duty factor only. Because as you mentioned, yes, you already have an instruction process that works to manipulate cadence. And so if you want to manipulate duty factor, you don't want to manipulate cadence at the same time.
Yes, true. But then also, if you're not focusing on that specific model, you still don't want it to affect cadence. If, for example, you want to study the effect of changing duty factor on performance, if the cadence changes as well, are you really looking at the effect of duty factor?
Exactly. So you want something that is as specific to duty factor as possible. So that's great. That's excellent. So you like you said, you went at it with the ideas of stance time and flight time as being really the two variables that you're going to try to figure out how to best instruct the runners to do. So how did you instruct them?
We instructed them with just these simple instructions. And because we thought it would be quite difficult for them, we did per instruction three short training trials of 1 minute, after which they received visual feedback of their, for example, their stance time during the baseline, so before the instructions, and their stance time during this training trial. But to our surprise, we saw that most people, I think everyone except for one participant, were able to already change their stance and flight time on this based on this simple instruction within the first minute.
Within the first minute. So it didn't even require the three separate blocks of training. And
no,
it wasn't. And the feedback, was it real time feedback that was being given, the visual feedback?
No, it was given after the instruction or after the training block, because we did not want to have visual feedback in the field. Because how are you going to do that?
Exactly. So you're saying that a verbal cue, a verbal set of instruction given basically one time was able to alter the fundamental aspect of running mechanics, in this case, duty factor, pretty consistently among how many individuals?
We had 12 participants.
Well, that's interesting. It's funny because I just had a conversation with a few other individuals who were adamant that it takes weeks at a minimum to be able to modify individuals' running form and mechanics. And we know that's not true because it so dependent on what variable you're trying to elicit a change in. Right. If it's something like cadence or duty factor, it's very feasible that it could be learned very, very quickly. And maybe I should be careful with the term learned, that they can, yes, that they can understand and apply the instructions correctly. They, yes, may not have actually learned it. Right.
No, I would use the term adapt.
Adapt. I like that.
Because exactly, you don't know if they train for 1 minute, that doesn't mean that a week later it will still they will have retained that running style. It just says based on the instructions, they are able to change it right then and there.
Right then and there. So have you done any follow-up work yet to be able to see how well they can retain it?
Yes, we've done a field study, but we've not really done a study where they were pushed into one direction. So only trying to increase the duty factor, because as we've discussed before, we don't really know what's better or
which direction to go.
Yeah, so we use this idea of learning through exploration, where we use the instructions in both directions to help them vary with it. Yeah, try different things a little bit, which will then help them self-optimize in whichever way works best for them, really.
And again, self-optimize meaning self-optimize toward which variable or toward what parameter? Performance?
Towards their personal preference, really.
Yeah. So more about just what they feel is most comfortable or preferred.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. All right. So go ahead, Jeremy.
I was say, did you notice when you were trying to, you know, give them the cueing of you know, increased contact time or whatever, did they have mechanics that would change as well, whether that was a rear foot strike to a forefoot strike or vice versa? Would those kind of things change as they try to increase their duty factor?
Yes, they did, especially with increasing the ground contact time. You really saw that people started with a rear foot landing more than a forefoot landing, just to elongate that ground contact time as much as possible. But we did specifically not tell them to do that, because right, then you'll, yeah, you're changing things that you might want to measure later. Because we also did a lab study where we measured full kinematic and kinetic data. Uh-huh. And then guided people towards a higher duty factor, lower duty factor, higher cadence, lower cadence, to see what happens. But we haven't fully analyzed the results of that yet.
Oh, you're going to tease us.
A little teaser. Yeah,
a little teaser. We definitely, yes, want to see that. Do you have any thoughts or any ideas toward whether or not they changed their vertical displacement as a function of the duty factor? I'm assuming that with a longer duty factor, with more time spent on the ground, that they reduced their center of mass displacement. In other words, they weren't getting quite as high during the flight phase.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the longer ground contact time really looks more like speed walking.
Yeah.
Somehow. So a very constant hip height. And then the other one is really like hopping. So yeah, quite a large vertical displacement. Yeah.
Are you familiar with the term grounded running?
Yes.
Yeah. So is that kind of what you started to see emerge out of their running style?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So really, long contact time, but with grounded running, the flight time is actually absent, right?
Right. Correct. Yeah. It's really more of a, like you say, a fast walk. Yeah, exactly. So were there any surprises, I guess, out of the research that you did, anything that you weren't quite expecting?
Well, we weren't really expecting that they would be able to change it so quickly. So that was kind of a surprise. But then also, we also looked at the changes in cadence. And overall, we did not see a change in cadence, but there were two people who did change their cadence. Okay. So this is also something to keep in mind, that not for every individual this may be feasible.
So the cueing was either try to increase your flight time or decrease flight time or increase stance time or decrease stance time, correct? That was the cueing you gave them. Is it, yes, possible? Is it possible? I almost can, in my mind, see like bounding. Like, can someone have increased stance time and increased flight time?
If you increase stance time and increase flight time, you're effectively increasing step time, so changing cadence. So that's also why we checked for changes in cadence, because even if you increase stance time and keep flight time constant, you're effectively changing cadence. But in terms of the connection between the instructions, of course, increasing the stance time and decreasing the flight time would have the exact same effect.
So I think one of the other variables with gait retraining that we need to be very careful of, and how it's used in clinic settings, is we're trying to provide a change, but not necessarily an unconstrained change. So we don't want them to be able to change it in an infinite capacity or to an unlimited value, because if they change it too high, then you're creating just the same problem again, but in a different circumstances. So in the sense of the instructions given, was there any sort of a targeted amount of change you were looking to elicit, or was it just, could they elicit any change in the direction that you were asking?
Yeah, so we asked them to try to change it, but with the side note that we weren't trying to get them any injuries. So don't do anything crazy. Yeah. But we didn't specifically set a number or anything.
Okay. So that'll be really important, right? Because I'm guessing that some people may have taken those instructions and pushed them to the extreme, which may not be what you would want to eventually do in your final solution. You know, I think this seems like, if I'm reading you correctly, this is an early step in your process of developing your solution set for eliciting these changes. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We really wanted to know whether the instructions were effective. So yeah, we did. We were kind of surprised that they were, to be honest.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's always refreshing when a simple approach can be effective, right? Sometimes we tend to over-engineer some of the solutions right out of the gate. And it's just nice to be able to start off with a very simple approach and see what it does.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Yeah. All right. So where are you heading in the future? You already teased us a little bit with the data you've already collected and are looking to release and publish. What sort of follow-up collections and studies are you looking to go move toward?
Yeah. So we are working towards this running buddy application, mm-hmm. Which will help people explore their running style or different running styles around their own running style by changing the cadence and the duty factor. And we are working together with a company that has that makes earbuds, because mm-hmm. these instructions are all acoustic, so they have to be provided acoustically. And these earbuds also measure the cadence and stance time. The company is named Doppel, for anyone who's interested.
Very cool.
So we implemented this whole exploration idea into an application with those earbuds. And the idea of the application is really to help runners explore running style, to help them self-optimize. Because nice. We don't know what's optimal.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm sorry, what was the name of the company again of the earbuds?
The name of the company is Doppel, Doppele.
Doppele. No, that's excellent. Thank you for that.
The next step is really to test that application in the field and see how it can be used, and also get some input from coaches and runners to improve it.
Oh, that's very good. So is the goal to be able to then elicit, or to do more of a population level study on a wide scale to be able to collect and see what's happening?
Yeah, that would be ideal. But I'm not sure I'll be able to do that before the end of my PhD.
That's right. I'm guessing you're hoping you don't have to. You want PhD out the door. So is the goal... is your personal interest more toward the performance side or toward the injury side? Or do you see those two completely intertwined?
I think they're intertwined, because if you're going for performance, but you're injured, there's no performance at all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And likewise, if you have a solution to the injury, but it compromises performance, that's not really a solution either.
Well, depending on your motivation.
Yeah, fair enough.
Purpose.
Fair enough. Yeah, absolutely. Motivation plays a big role, as we all know. Well, this was fantastic. Yeah, Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, I just one real quick question. I guess I'm thinking of future stuff, and you know, with this as well, is there, and maybe you, obviously I don't think we know this, but a better age, you know, I just think about kind of the gymnastic concept of, I think you're learning gymnastics at a young age, and it's a new skill that you're learning versus this inherent learned walking, running that we kind of all have. And then we start to change it, but it's later on. Do you feel like there's a more optimal time to make changes? And perhaps if we're doing it when it's younger, it's not as complex to make a change. And at this point, I don't know that we know enough to say these are the changes we need to make at a younger age. But do you feel like there's an age that's going to be better and more optimal to make changes and four people in their gate?
Well, there probably is, but I'm not sure. I think we can all adapt as we age still.
I like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you're right. You hit on a key gap in the literature, right? Almost everything we know on human movement, so much of that is done in the adult population or the young adult population, even not even thinking of middle and older age individuals, but the adolescent, the pre-adolescent. There's just a smattering of work in that area, especially in terms of running, and a lot more that we need to understand to be able to make some of those generalizations. Anouk, thank you very much for your time, for all your work. Congrats on your successes so far, and PhD should be in hand in no time at all, I'm sure.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for inviting me.
Anytime. We would love to get you back on as well when the PhD is finished and you've got your series of studies to present.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of today's podcast. On behalf of my co-host, Jeremy Stoker, we'd like to thank you for tuning in. And as a reminder, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. A reminder to check for updates on the 2023 Mountainland Running Summit, September 26th through 28th at summit.mlpt.com. And as always, you can find more information on all the running medicine resources offered by Mountainland Physical Therapy at mlpt.com/run. We'll see you next time.
This podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Exercises that are safe and appropriate for some people may not be for you. No treatment program should be undertaken without first consulting your physical therapist or physician. The contents of this podcast is protected under United States copyright laws and may not be reproduced, redistributed, transmitted, displayed, published, or broadcast without prior written permission of Mountainland Physical Therapy.